Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, all listeners. Welcome to a live edition of Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, and I'm joined with co-host Chris Ricketts tonight. And boy, do we have a lot going on in the sports world. Today is really the first day of Major League Baseball. We have the Marlins playing the Cardinals tonight, and we're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about opening day tomorrow, the official opening day. We're going to give our projections for who's going to be playing in the World Series, as well as the division winners. We're going to touch on the Kentucky-Kansas game on Monday. There's just so much going in baseball. How you going? How you doing, Mr. Ricketts?
Doing great. How you, man?
Man, it's Wednesday, and I've already worked 42 hours.
I hear you. Yeah, it's been a rough week at the office here as well, so we're in the same boat on that front.
Man, I just wish it was Friday. I woke up this morning and thought it was Thursday, and my wife told me it was Wednesday. So it's kind of been hard to regroup ever since. So
I hear you. Well, hang in there, big man. It'll be over before you know it.
Oh, I know it will. So I guess we're going to talk about first, I mean, what's on everybody's mind and what's fresh is the Kansas-Kentucky game on Monday. We did a halftime show and went over. Kentucky had a 14-point lead at halftime, Chris, and, you know, I had a feeling that, you know, if Kentucky didn't keep the pedal on to the metal, it was going to get close. And Kentucky, I think, what did they score, 20 points in the second half maybe? It's just like they went into a pre-bend, and they got out of their rhythm. They couldn't hit shots. And Kansas, you know, like they have all year, they just hung around and kept, you know, getting in fast break opportunities. Transition and Kentucky just couldn't put it away. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it just seemed like Kentucky went into that protect mode, almost like they did against Vanderbilt in the SEC championship game. You know, they had a big lead on them and just didn't keep the throttle down and allowed Vanderbilt to get back in it. And then before you know it, you know, Vandy pulls off the upset and wins the SEC championship there. And you know, it almost happened to them again in the national title game. Luckily, you know, they were able to separate themselves right there at the start of the second half and, you know, open up a little, I think, a 16 to 18-point lead there, and they were just able to hang on, you know.
Well, I think that, you know, how we talked about, and you've listened to the show and you've been on, and how Kentucky is so poised. I think they lost their poise Monday night because I think with about 10 minutes to go in the game, 8 minutes, it started being real that, hey, we're playing for the national championship. And I think the entire Kentucky team just froze.
I agree. You know, I mean, you could tell the pressure to close out that championship game started weighing on them. And, you know, that's the issue that you have when you rely on freshmen, you know, because they're not – they haven't been in that situation before. And there's no substitute for experience, but then again, there's also no substitute for just raw talent, and that's what Kentucky's got, you know, and that's what they had on everybody that they played. They're just a more talented team than Kansas was, and, you know, that talent prevailed.
Well, I feel bad for Kansas because any other year, you know, they probably had a good enough team to win it, but Kentucky is just from top to bottom, even coach-wise, they're great. And you can't, like you said, experience is one thing and talent the other, but I started seeing freshmen the other night in that game, and it surprised me a little bit, but not too much, because I know that's a hard part when you're looking up that scoreboard and you're a kid and you're like, okay, we're up by 18, okay, 15, okay, 8, 7, and it's just the panic set in. And
exactly.
You have Gilchrist and Davis, and those guys stepped up, and they played great, but they almost gave it away.
Yeah, and the one thing about this Kentucky team, you know, other than, you know, previous teams that Calipari's had, this team plays together, and you could really see that Monday night. I mean, those kids, you know, there's not a lot of selfish players on that team. You know, they're willing to share the ball, and you know, Davis was just a beast defensively. I mean, every time Kansas drove the lane, I mean, he was there just – swatting balls away, and he really impressed me Monday night, and the whole team, the way that they played together, you know, yeah, they're young, but, man, those boys sure are talented.
Could you imagine if Kentucky had these guys for 4 years instead of one, what's going to happen? What could happen? I mean, this could be special. I mean, last year's Final Four team would have easily made it all the way if Davis would have been on the team that had a big man. You cannot get down low on them good. You have to take outside shots. And if you're not hitting outside shots, you're in trouble because Kentucky's taking high percentage shots. And even though they shot bad in the second half on Monday night, they're still a great shooting team. And
exactly.
It's very hard to beat somebody that disciplined, great on defense, and they just take smart. They play smart. Well, we talked about before, Kentucky is probably the smartest team in the game. You'd think Vanderbilt or Duke or somebody. But Kentucky plays smarter than any team I've seen in a long time.
Well, and the key is they play together, you know, too. There's not any – it doesn't look like they have any egos on that team, you know. That you could tell that that team was focused just by the way that they were able to close. I mean, if you can close out a national title game with the majority of your guys being freshmen, that Coach Cal's got to be given some credit here, you know. I mean, a lot of people get on him about the one-and-done players that he's brought through his program, and, you know, he just proved that this can work. And if you get five guys or, you know, six, seven guys that can play together as a team, you know, you're going to be hard to beat. And kind of to answer your question, what would happen if, you know, these guys all decided to stay together for 3 or 4 years? I mean, you'd definitely be looking at multiple titles there in Lexington. I mean, they could very easily be a dynasty. But, you know, with the one-and-done situation that we're going through in the college, you know, basketball arena, you know, it's going to be hard to build those dynasties because you're not going to have these talented players that are going to stick around very long.
Well, you see, you know, Calipari's been in Kentucky 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in three of those years, two of them, he's made the Final Four, and one, he won the championship. And he did it this last 2 years with two totally different teams, with two totally different dynamics.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just like you have stars, you know, on both sides, you know, on each year. But something about this team, you know, and I believe there was something going around about Calipari. What do you think? What is the news on him? I know you said something earlier.
Well, you know, I kind of just was going to pose the question of, I mean, do you think that Calipari could be lured to the NBA? Do you think he could kind of be a one and done, you know, one championship and I'm gone? You know, I think the NBA could be a possible future destination for Calipari. I mean, you know, if the money's right and the right situation pops up, I mean, what if the New York Knicks come calling and offering, you know, $10 million per year? Do you think he would leave Kentucky for that gig?
No, because Kentucky is insane enough to pay him $10 million to match it. I think Calipari is going to stay in Kentucky, and he could, unless he gets hit with some kind of probation or some kind of scandal, I think he's going to retire at Kentucky. And it's kind of like Nick Saban in Alabama, Chris. It's like it's a machine running now. You know, you're recruiting the best players in the country. They're just flocking to Kentucky and Alabama and whatnot. So, like, Saban just signed a contract. He's going to retire at Alabama, and I thought he would too. And so is Calipari. He is having way too much fun. I saw him this year. He had that team just calm, playing together, and he had fun, you know. And the other night in the interview, he said, "This is not about me. This is about these kids." And I think he loves college. That I just don't think money's an issue with him because, I mean, if you have $5 million, what's the difference with five more almost? But Kentucky is a very tradition-rich program, Chris, and they're going to pay money. They're going to pay an insane amount of money to keep him.
Yeah. You know, I just look back at, you know, when he went to the New Jersey Nets, you know, his first season was pretty bad there. And then in his second season, I believe he actually made the playoffs. And then, of course, his third season, he kind of had some issues. You know, team got off to a slow start. And so you know, they ended up making a coaching change then. And, you know, I think the desire still may be, you know, the desire might still be there to crave that itch, you know, of winning the NBA title. And I think you give him the right stage it may tempt him to go. You know, the Knicks, I mean, what bigger stage could you get than coaching in Madison Square Garden, you know, getting to coach Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire and having all that exposure. And then also, you know, he with the way that college basketball recruiting is, you know, it's unlike college football. You know, basically you coach through these AU programs, and you know you're constantly, I would say, you know, tinkering on a borderline there of sanctions, you know, because the recruiting college basketball is just, it's just kind of a sleazy way of recruiting. And maybe by going to the NBA, you know, he can sleep a little bit better at night. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, am I gonna, you know, is the NCAA gonna come down on me, you know? And so I think that may be tempting to him.
I look at Calipari, and a lot of people say he's a dirty coach, Chris, and I think a lot of people think that. He might be. You know, you don't know. In this game, it seems like, I mean, you don't see top three of the top five recruits go to one school, really. I mean, it's unheard of, but he keeps continuing to do it, and whether he's cheating or not, I have no idea. But to go back to your point, you know, the NBA, you don't see many, even in NFL to college football, from NBA to NCAA, you don't see coaches do good in both. It's just something about it. I think Calipari went to the NBA. He tried it just like Spurrier went to the NFL and Saban went to the NFL and couldn't make it. I think it's hard to gain respect of those players in the NBA. Those guys make a lot more than you do as a coach, and they're all selfish, most of them. So you don't have the support in the NBA as much. In college, that guy's a god. I mean, in Kentucky, I mean, they're burning buildings. They're shooting people in the foot the other night after the championship game. Those guys are passionate, Chris, about their basketball. And it's the South. I think Calipari would be a total idiot if he left to go to the NBA, because I don't see him being a successful coach in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you. You know, it all goes back to that. What does he want? Does he want money or does he want control? And I think, you know, college basketball offers him that control aspect of it. And then, of course, the NBA, you know, they can write the big checks. You know, Kentucky can too, but, you know, some people are motivated by money. So, you know, if you've got $5 million, what's $10 million? Well, for somebody that wants to be paid, you know, that's $5 million more dollars. So, you know,
that's 100% raise, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty good. So, you know, I'm sure he's going to have multiple offers from the NBA, but I don't believe for one second, you know, if he says, well, I'm not even entertaining that idea. I'm dead set on staying here at Kentucky. I definitely think he will listen to these offers that are going to be made to him by the NBA professional teams. You know, will he stay? Will he go? You know, I think it's a 50-50 chance whether he'll return back to Kentucky.
Well, Chris, I got a point to make that I just thought of is, you know, it's easier for him to jump ship because, you know, a lot of coaches have trouble because they recruit a guy and they tell him that he's going to be there. They want to stay three more years with the kid. But with Calipari, these guys are one and done. So the emotional attachment to these players would be less. You know, it wouldn't change his mind to leave or stay because of the attachment to the players, because they're gone anyway. So, like, it would be a perfect time to leave if you were Calipari, because all your team is leaving. Your entire team is going to the NBA, and the new coach would be able to come in and start over. So if he's going, this could be the year to do it. But I just don't see him leaving. I just think he loves it, and he's kind of got that complex about he wants to win. He wants to be in control. And, you know, Alabama football, they'll pay you a lot of money. They're a football school. Kentucky's a basketball school. And they're very proud of it, and they will pay whatever it takes if they feel he's worth it. And he has to be worth it. If you bring in that kind of recruit, that kind of talent every year, year in and year out, you're going to be in the talk every year for a championship. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, you've hit the nail right on the head. I mean, this guy has absolutely elevated the Kentucky program. I mean, let's face it, you know, Kentucky had some success early on with Tubby Smith, but after Tubby left, you know, Kentucky was almost like a forgotten program. And, you know, when they hired John Calipari, I mean, it was a game changer. I mean, it's the equivalent of when Alabama hired Nick Saban. You know, you knew when they made this hire that he was going to bring the results, and he has. You know, like you said, in 3 years he's taken this team to two Final Fours, got one championship. You know, next year he's in line to get, I think, three of the top five players in the country will probably commit to Kentucky. So, you know, he's not really losing anything. He's just reloading, and he's already built that Kentucky brand up to where these kids are wanting to come to Kentucky. I mean, they're knocking down the door to get to Lexington because they know that, you know, they're one stop away from the NBA, and that's what he offers these recruits. And so he's done all the hard work, and now he's just going to, you know, see the rewards coming.
And I'm going to give the number real quick. The call-in number, if you want to weigh in with us, 646-716-5564. We'd love to hear from you. And, Chris, another thing like he offers is that playing time for kids. They know, I think Calipari enjoys the one and done because it helps him recruit better. Because, like you said, you're going to play. You're going to go to the NBA. You're going to be in prime time. You're going to play for a championship. I mean, what else do you want as a kid? I mean, that's all you want to hear. I'm going to play. I'm going to go to the NBA, and I'm going to win a championship. Think about it. What other three things could those kids hear?
That's it. I mean, that's his three recruiting points. You know, we're going to have maximum TV exposure. You're going to play for championships, and you're going to go to the NBA. You know, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, he's got the framework in place to where recruiting basically is self-sustaining. I mean, his program is going to recruit itself, and the products of that program are going to recruit these players there. So he's got the perfect setup right now, and if he stays at Kentucky, I mean, Kentucky will be relevant as long as he stays there.
I 100% agree with you, man. It's just the nature of the beast these days, and every program has their, you know, their runs and their up and downs and everything. It's like Alabama is up right now. USC was up. You know, they were unbeatable for a time, and like everyone, they fall. And Kentucky, I think the fall will be either sanctioned, come from the NCAA, to force Calipari to really resign, or to force Kentucky to fire him. Or it could be just, you know, players are tired of Kentucky, you know. But I don't think that'll happen. But I could see sanctions coming because it's very hard to recruit. And like you said, I heard a basketball, they were talking basketball, I think it was Jay Billis, about recruiting last year, and he said it's probably the dirtiest it's ever been with these agents and these other coaches for high schools. And I mean, it's just a dirty game right now.
Exactly.
You,
I mean,
you know these kids are getting a lot of money, Chris, to come.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, going back to the recruiting, I've read everything I've ever read about college basketball recruiting. You know, it's like you're almost dealing with a mini agent in these AAU coaches, and you know, if there's always that chance that they could be tied to, you know, some improper benefit or whatever, and so you're just basically one recruit away from being, you know, from having the NCAA, you know, knock down your door. So. Yeah, I agree. You know, the only way that Kentucky would be irrelevant anymore would be if Calipari leaves or if sanctions come, because right now Kentucky is just the hotbed. It's where these players want to go. Because we said earlier, they're going to get the exposure. They're going to go to the NBA.
I agree 100%, and we're going to change gears. We're going to go from the hardwood to the diamond, and baseball season is here. And you know, one thing good about baseball, Chris, it means football's getting closer. So baseball's starting up. It's April. Before you know it, I'm telling you, before you blink your eye, it's going to be August. And this is where all the fun's going to begin. And baseball is such a long season, and it's so it's fun early, too, because tell me if I'm wrong, Chris, these pitchers early in the – it's a hitter's game early because these pitchers, it looks they look like to me they're afraid to throw, really, you know. They're out there. They're not loose. Josh Johnson for Florida tonight – or Miami, excuse me, one of the most unhittable pitchers there is. He gave up three runs, I think, in the first inning tonight. So I love baseball season, especially opening day. Are you taking off tomorrow to watch it?
Actually, I will be off tomorrow. Man, yeah, I'm ready for the Braves season opener. You know, they travel up to New York, play the Mets. But, yeah, the baseball is just – this is a great time of year, you know. And I agree with you. You know, it's – you watch some of these spring training games, and it kind of seems like it just flows right over into the early part of the season. You know, a lot of pitchers, they just don't have their location down, and that's the most important thing with pitchers is location, location. It's like being a real estate agent, I guess, or dealing with real estate. It's all about location.
Yep.
You know, Johnson, I was watching him earlier in the first inning, you know, and this guy's got, like you said, he's just got some filthy stuff, but he was leaving breaking balls and fastballs over the plate, and I'm here to tell you, if you leave a pitch over the plate for the hitters to hit at the major league level, guess what's going to happen? They're going to hit it, and they're going to hit it hard, and that's kind of why, you know, it's early on. It definitely is a hitter's game.
People don't realize it. I don't care if a pitcher throws 120; they will be hit if they don't start tricking the batter and hitting their location wherever they want, mixing their pitches up. Because these are pro hitters. I don't think people realize, honestly, and I said this before, how great these baseball players are. I mean, how hard it is to hit a baseball going 100 miles an hour and then hit a 70-mile-per-hour curveball that looks the same coming out of their hand. It's just a guessing game, and it's a sport where you can be right 30% of the time and make millions.
Exactly. You'll be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and football, if you're 30%, you're fired. You're not around, you know.
Exactly.
Basketball, but baseball, it just takes so much talent. I mean, the mental part of the game, the physical part, the wear and tear on the players' bodies, and, God, you know, it gets old going to work every day for us. I know these guys make great money. I'm going to leave money out of it, but, you know, sometimes they get tired when it's 110 degrees outside and they're in full uniform playing baseball every day.
Yeah, and you know, it's 162 games. They're playing like 9 to 10 months out of the year. Yeah, you know, these baseball players, they definitely have to keep themselves in great physical conditioning because the wear and tear of the season will just break that body down. So, you know, these guys, you know, I always kind of laugh when I hear, well, you know, baseball players are, you know, they're some of the most unathletic, you know, of the professional athletes, and I just kind of chuckle, and you know, because you know, if you've ever played baseball, and just imagine trying to play 162 games, you know, these guys play. They might have one night off a week. You know, they're constantly in the cage, swinging the bat, and you know, taking ground balls, and then playing and just playing the game. You know, so.
Watching film, having to watch pitchers, their tendencies.
Exactly.
It's like a mental game as much as it is physical.
Exactly.
What about, I saw something so stupid today I read, and tell me if I'm wrong about this or what you think. The Reds signed Joey Votto to like $225 million contract. Are you kidding?
Yeah, a 10-year deal. They, you know, I understand what the Reds are doing. You know that this, Joey Votto. I mean, people forget this guy's an MVP type player. You know, he's had some injuries over the past couple of years, but you know, when he's on, he's definitely one of the more productive first basemen. You know, in Major League Baseball. You know, he's relatively young. I think he's like 26, 27. You know, they lock him up for 10 years at $22.5 million per. And, you know, it kind of goes, it's in line with what, you know, Prince Fielder and Pujols are making. And I guess this year was the year to be a highly productive first baseman in the free agency market. All those guys, all the big money. So,
you have three of the best first basemen in the game besides Miguel Cabrera. He's not a free agent. But Pujols, Fielder, and Votto, all three signing huge contracts. But let me tell you, when you sign somebody to a long deal with that kind of money, you might as well just fire them, I mean, because they're not going to be as productive. They're not as hungry. They don't come out every day. They're like, well, I'm getting paid. And it's human nature, Chris, to slack up a little bit when something's guaranteed almost. That money is guaranteed to him, most of it. So if he breaks his leg, if he gains 30 pounds eating too much McDonald's, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's getting paid. And I don't like these big contracts. Pujols, I mean, he was a great player, but I still think Pujols had a lot to do with steroids with him. And like Ron Braun with steroids. I mean, I think some of these players have to take steroids, Chris, because of the beating they take over a whole year playing this game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like the Votto move a lot better than the Pujols. You know, for obvious reasons, Pujols, you know, his better years are pretty much behind him. I mean, I think he can still have 3 to 4 more productive years, you know, at an MVP-type level. But what are the Angels going to do when he's 40 years old and they still owe him almost $100 million, you know, that contract? You know, I think they definitely mortgaged the future. You know, they definitely want to win now, and they were willing to pay any price to get him over there.
The Angels are tired, man. They're tired of the Yankees and the Rangers scoring all these runs. They got jealous, and they want to play with them.
Exactly. And so I like the Prince Fielder deal and the Joey Votto deal better than I like the Pujols deal, just because the fact these guys are younger. And to go back to your first point, you know, about, you know, not liking signing, you know, these players, these long-term deals, but it's almost the nature of the beast, because a lot of these teams are kind of forced to give them that type of money because that's what they're going to demand in the open market, and they want to get these guys locked up before they hit free agency, because they don't want the Yankees and the Red Sox, you know, like the Reds, they didn't want to get into a bidding war with the Yankees or the Red Sox or somebody else that can pay big money, you know, so they were willing to go ahead.
That's a very good point.
And they wanted to go ahead and get Votto locked up because he is their future and he is the face of that franchise.
That's a very good point. That you might as well do it now, because if you don't, you could pay a lot more if you really want this kid. And this kid might be in the clubhouse, Chris. He might be the best thing that ever happened to him. He might be a leader. He might be the spirit of the team. And the Reds were good last year. They were very good. And I think they're easily a playoff team and possibly could win the division this year. You said something about Prince Fielder. How good was Detroit last year without Prince Fielder? And now you're putting a stick like this in the lineup?
They're going
Cabrera?
To be absolutely dangerous.
Wow.
You know, they lost Victor Martinez, you know, for the year. And you know, I think they felt a lot of pressure to bring in a big bat to replace him. But, wow, I mean, you bring in Prince Fielder, you know, this team is going to score a lot of runs. And the other thing about Detroit is they have a very good pitching staff.
Verlander is the best in the game, bud.
Exactly.
Best
they have
the
Justin
game.
Verlander. They have Matt Scherzer. They got some guys that can – they got some legitimate flamethrowers on their pitching staff. So they are going to be loaded on both ends of the spectrum, pitching and hitting. So they're definitely going to be tough to beat, and they've definitely put themselves into a position to contend for that World Series title at the end of the year.
Yeah, and we're going to get into our predictions in just a few minutes. It won't be long, but for that reason alone, for Prince Fielder coming to Detroit, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I have them as probably the winners of the AL because, I mean, the hitting they have and last year how good they were, Verlander was on. Now, the only thing that would worry me, Chris, if Verlander got hurt or say Cabrera or one of those guys got hurt, it could be bad, especially if Verlander got hurt. But he doesn't look like – he doesn't have any signs of slowing down to me when I look at him.
Yeah, I agree with you. Verlander, you know, he's just a machine out there. And you know, as long as he doesn't have any arm issues, I mean, he's going to be fine. You know, they've got another little secret weapon that nobody really talks about in their catcher. You know, this Alex Avila kid, you know, he comes in last year, and all he does is make the All-Star team, and now he is their – you know, he is their starting catcher, and if you read anything about him, you know, all the pitchers love him. They just say, hey, he calls a great game. He's in command of the game, and, you know, you pair up a good catcher with a great pitching staff, I mean, that's just gonna spell trouble for the rest of the teams trying to knock the Tigers off.
And I'm going to go to the line. I believe we have our baseball expert, Trey Patterson, on the line. Is this you, Trey?
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good. How's it going, bud?
Good, good. Out here in sunny Las Vegas, doing well.
Well, how's the job treating you? Good?
Doing well. Everything's going well.
Good. We brought Trey on the show. Trey's a good friend of me and Chris, and he is a baseball – he plays baseball with us, and he's very knowledgeable in the game. So, Trey, are you excited about baseball?
Absolutely, Brian. I think it's going to be a fantastic year this year in baseball. A lot of big changes in baseball, which we don't actually see a whole lot every year. A lot of big names changing, a lot of divisions completely changing over. It'll be an exciting time to be a baseball fan.
Yeah, so I know you're a big Tampa Bay fan, right? Or Tampa.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, after living in Tampa for a number of years, you know, kind of sort of caught Ray fever while down there. And, you know, they got another great team coming up. I think they're going to – AL East is a beast. I think everybody has identified that as the toughest division to be a part of this year. And even the Blue Jays look halfway solid this year. I think that's going to be a wild division, especially with the two wild cards this year. You may have both of them coming out, and both of them coming out of the AL East.
That's a good point. That could be scary. To try to make it through that playoff. So let's start in the AL East, guys. Chris, who do you like to win the East and why?
Well, Trey's going to love this pick, but I'm going to take his Tampa Bay Devil Rays. You know, I think they've got, you know, they're a solid ball club. I mean, they've got good hitting. They've got a really solid rotation, you know, starting up top with David Price and now they have a young rookie coming in that just looks like he's going to take the major league by storm, and Matt Moore. And I'm really expecting a big year out of him because he's going to be like their fourth starter. And this kid has electric stuff. So I think, you know, the combination of their pitching staff and just the overall solid lineup that they have, I really think they're going to come out on top on ALE.
Well, that's you, Trey.
You know, as much as I do love the Rays this year, I think they're going to do really well. I think it's going to really come down to, I think, them in Boston. And a lot of people, I saw a lot of experts picking Boston to finish lowest third. They do have bullpen troubles going in this year. I think it's going to come down to them and the Rays. I think it's a pick 'em. I think the really interesting point in all this is the Yankees and how actually they're going to be this year with some of their aging in their lineup and some question marks all throughout their rotation. You know, I mean, I'm not so sure you can rely on some of those names in that starting rotation for the Yankees, especially when actually Chris just notified, you know, hey, that Rays lineup's got a great rotation, and pitching always beats hitting. So we'll see. We're in the era of the pitcher. I think it's going to come down to whoever can have those best starting staff and that bullpen. And that's the one concern I have going into the Rays this year is, you know, Kyle Farnsworth already had some elbow issues, which – there's some arm troubles that, you know, plagued him last year at the end of the year, and he's already got some issues this year. You know, I don't know if Joel Peralta, whoever they're going to put back there, is going to be, if Farnsworth has any trouble. That may be a real weakness for the Rays down the stretch.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Yankees, and I know they're aging, and I know you know, they've got a lot of question marks around the health and just the pitching, but C.C. Sabathia anchors that staff, and I think, you know, Curtis Granderson playing well, hitting the ball well. You have Robinson Cano is second. You have Garner. I think he'll have a bigger role this year and play better. So I think Boston, to me, they just don't have the pitching right now, but they can hit the ball better than just about anybody. So it's a toss-up, and I'm just going to pick the Yankees, especially since y'all two just picked, you know, somebody different. So I'm going to go against you and pick the Yankees. So let's go to the one of the best divisions. Not from top to bottom the best division, but the AL Central. I mean, this is probably a no-brainer. So we'll start with you, Trey.
Well, I think it's you say a no-brainer, but I think, you know, almost every expert's picking the Tigers, and I'm no different. That lineup just looks disastrous to run through for a bunch of mediocre teams. I mean, when you're the fourth starter for the Royals, I mean, they're going to get lit up. And you have to think about, I mean, that's really where it comes down, and all those games, they're really going to just pull away, I think. And you come into those third, fourth, and fifth starters for the Royals, the Indians, and the Twins, they're going to put up a lot of runs against those teams. So I think they're going to run away with it pretty early.
You, Chris?
I agree 100%. This is going to be a cakewalk for the Tigers. I'll probably win this division by 15 to 20 games. I mean, I don't even think it's going to be close.
That's a good number, 15. But I would pick the Indians if Charlie Sheen was playing Dorn was the third. But I'm gonna put the Indians at about third in this division, and that's bad. You know, if you're third in the AL Central this year, you're terrible. So the Tigers and that, we all agree. That's probably the only one we'll agree on the whole way. Let's go to the AL West. You have a lot of, you know, free agent moves for Anaheim this year. So, Chris, what do you think of the AL West? Who's going to win it?
The AL West, I've got to go with the Los Angeles Angels. I mean, you know, they've got the big signing in Pujols. He's definitely going to come in year one, you know, looking to justify that big contract. I predict he's going to have a monster year. Possibly could be your AL MVP. You know, they've got a solid hitting lineup. They've got some great pitching. I think it's going to be close, though. I mean, I think the Rangers are going to push them, but I'm just not quite sold on Yu Darvish yet. You know, he's going to have to be the ace of that staff. And, you know, first year in the league, I think he'll have some early success, but as the season wears on and as these players get a chance to look at his stuff, you know, we'll see how he does, you know, off the break. So I've got some questions, you know, with the Rangers on their starting lineup. I'm just not sure they got the horses to hold the Angels off.
Well, Trey, I called the Angels the wrong name. I said Anaheim. I wish the team would quit changing their names. So I could remember the name Angels, but sorry I mispronounced that, guys.
Oh,
what do you think about the West?
You know, Chris has made a lot of good points, but it's really hard to pick against the Rangers, as they've kind of been a big surprise the last 2 years. I don't think anybody expected them to do as well both years running back to back. But I think the real X factor in that division is Kendry Morales coming back off 2 years where he really hasn't played. I think people may have forgotten how good he was for a short period of time, and you know, I think that's one of those divisions that it's going to see is whose pitching holds up in the heat of the summer when they're having to play at Texas and they're out there in California. And I think the Angels have a little more depth, especially in that bullpen. And I think that's where they win the division, is coming down to those seventh and eighth and ninth game, you know, innings in the games, and they're going to be able to pull that division out.
Yeah, I'm with you. You guys hit all my points, or at least a couple of them. Anaheim's pitching's better. You know, that's the bottom line. And now you add a bat with Pujols in it. You know, a lineup with Pujols, a lot of more runs scored. And Anaheim's, you know, had trouble scoring runs sometimes. But I think with Pujols in the lineup, somebody else is going to be able to step up, you know, and hit. So I'm going to say Anaheim by probably, I think it'll come down to probably, or Los Angeles, excuse me, not Anaheim. It'll probably come down to the last week. You know, I think it's going to be that close. I think these two teams are amazing. And I think, you know, if anybody can beat the Yankees or the Tigers, it could be one of these guys. So I want to say the Angels, and now we're going to move over to my favorite division, the NL East. And, Trey, what do you think about this?
You know, this is one of those divisions where I've seen a lot of different answers and who's going to pick who and who's the hottest team. And it's funny, as we watch, the Marlins play and all, their brand new stadium and how they have a nightclub in left field. That all sounds great and their revamped lineup. But one of the things you have to consider is a lot of teams are still really good in that division, including the Phillies. I think this is still the Phillies division. I think the Marlins and the Braves are going to battle it out. Probably the Marlins finishing second, maybe a wild card, and I think Atlanta may have not taken the step they needed. So I think the Phillies are still king with all their pitching they have.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, the one I want to say the Phillies, 100% definitively, but the absence of Ryan Howard and Chase Utley, I don't see a good timetable of when those guys are going to be back. So the hitting of the Phillies is, raising a big concern for me. At this point, I think it's a toss-up. I think the surprise team in this division is going to be the Washington Nationals. Strasburg is going to pitch a full year. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery. So if he can be effective, the Nationals have a very solid rotation. And I think if they get any hitting, and depending on when Mr. Harper is called up and what he does, they could be a factor here. I don't know if they're going to push for the division title, but they could possibly be a wild card. So I'm expecting big things from the Washington Nationals this year. That's kind of my surprise team in Major League Baseball this season. But at the end of the day, I mean, the Phillies have the pitching top to bottom, and as much as it breaks my heart, being a diehard Braves fan, I'm going to have to pick the Phillies, but not by much. I mean, I think the Phillies win this division maybe by one or two games. And I think the Braves and the Marlins will both be pushing for that division lead. I'm just not – the one thing that really concerns me about the Braves is they didn't make any move in the offseason to add a bat in that lineup, and that's what they're just desperately missing. They have the pitching. They have the young pitching to get it done, but I just don't know where the offense is going to come from.
Yeah, I look at the Braves in this, and Hayward has to produce. Last year, he didn't even exist in ways, and Prado was hurt, battling injuries. That hurt him a lot, and the pitching let him down. Derek Lowe last year just was terrible. But the thing that kept the Braves in a lot of games, those close games, was Craig Kimbrell and the Venters kid. Those guys were unhittable in the 8th and 9th innings, and it allowed the Braves to stay in it, but at the end of the day, the Braves wore out. I think the pitching staff wore out for the Braves. The hitting just went downhill. So it wouldn't surprise me this year if the Braves actually made a run for it. I think they're well coached. I think they have a great team, like some young players in it. So if Freeman hits well, Hayward, Prado, and Chipper Jones is retiring after this year, thank God. So I just think the Braves have a shot, but I'm going to pick the Phillies because of the pitching staff. But I do have question marks about Chase Utley and Howard. Without those two guys, I don't know how they're going to score their runs, but also I don't see how teams are going to score against them. So I'm going to put the Phillies 1, Braves 2, Nationals 3, Marlins 4, and then the Mets, of course, last. So in the NL Central, it looks interesting to me. Trey, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is and you guys bring up a lot of good points on the East, too, by the way. I think Washington is a great team to pick if you really want to take odds in that division and see what you win. But being that I'm out here in Vegas, I think that the Central really is the division that I can't really wrap my head around. I mean, you had the Brewers, who were the team everybody thought was going to be great. Fulder leaves, Braun and his whole test debacle. And then you got, La Russa leaving the Cardinals. I'm not really sure what to make of this division this year. Top to bottom, I think a lot of teams have a lot of problems. I think the Cardinals are still probably the better team, but who knows how they're going to react with pitching. And Kyle Lowe is your opening day starter today. I'm not sure if that's going to match up against a lot of guys, number one. I think you may see the Pirates kind of surprised with their young talent. But ultimately, you know, one of those toss-ups, see who falls first. But I think the Cardinals may have the most experience when it comes after their World Series run and some of their young players getting a lot of experience. So I think the Cardinals, but I'll tell you, if somebody else wins this division, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think just about everybody has a shot, except for maybe the Cubs. I don't think the Cubs are going to be anywhere near the top. So it's an interesting division.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I agree. The NL Central is like picking the NL East. I mean, it's definitely a toss-up between three or four teams. You know, if you just told me I had to pick one, I mean, I've convinced myself that the Reds are ready to take over and actually win this thing. You know, I like Joey Votto. I like what he brings to the table. I think he's just, you know, he's a solid player. The question mark there is going to be their starting pitcher. I know they brought Matt Latos over, and you know, I really like their bullpen until, you know, Mattson went down for the year, and now, you know, so there's going to be some questions there. But I think overall, I think the Reds will find a way to get it done. But would it surprise me if, you know, the Cardinals or the Pirates or the Brewers won this thing? I agree with Trey. It's a hard one to pick. I'll take the Reds.
Yeah, both of y'all have real good points, and I think we all agree the Cubs will be last. So I'm gonna go with the Reds, and I just think it with all the changes the Cardinals had, the losses, and I just think the Reds were on the cusp last year doing some good things. So I'm just gonna flip a coin and say the Reds, and just, you know, I think it's just as good a pick as any. So now let's go to the NL West, Trey. I know you, since you're in Vegas, you ought to have more information than we do. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I want to make one more point on the Central that I think you get brought kind of funny in, and I think one of the reasons why we all picked the Cubs to finish last, and I think it's when you hear that, you know, Soriano is having a good spring, and that's the reason the Cubs might win some games. That's the reason we all picked them last. I mean, come on, Chicago. I'm sure we just offended all of your Chicago listeners, but, you know.
Yeah. I had Soriano on my fantasy team 12 years ago as a star.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't cover any ground in outfield, and he's hitting, you know, 240, you know, who knows. But
yeah, he strikes out 150 times a year, so.
Exactly. The Mark Pryor days are over in Chicago, not to pile on, but they do have Starlin Castro, which I think is, if you're a Cubs fan, that's the reason to watch. That kid is really good. So if anything the Cubs have, they have probably the best shortstop in the NL. So at least they have that. But going on to the West, I'll tell you, Tarvin, this is a really interesting division, and the real reason is pitching. If you like good pitching, you like the NL West. Between Matt, you know, the Giants, who have Matt Cain, Madison Bumgarner, who a lot of people are going to really, I think, get to know this year. He's going to be phenomenal. You know, Lincecum. I mean, and then you have Clayton Kershaw. I mean, what a talent that guy is. I think at the end of the day, the surprise team is going to be the Dodgers, I think. Everybody's down on them. The team got sold. All the offseason turmoil. They didn't sign who everybody thought they should sign. But, man, Matt Kemp, I think Ethier is going to have a bounce-back year. Picking the Dodgers to win this division, it's going to be one of those divisions where no team is going to run away with it, and you may see a lot of surprises down the stretch. Every year there's a team in this division, the Padres, the Giants, who seem to win late in the stretch when they're not supposed to. This is going to be one of those years, and I think the Dodgers are that team this year.
Chris?
I'm going to have to go with the Arizona Diamondbacks for the NL West, and it will be by less than two games, and it will come down. I agree with Trey. I think you're going to see new life, you know, for the Dodgers. You know, Magic Johnson just bought them, and I think Matt Kemp, he's a stud. Andre Ethier, I agree. He's going to have a bounce back year. And then, of course, you know, they've got Kershaw and Billingsley. Look for Billingsley to have a bounce back year, too, on the mound. But I think at the end of the day, I like the makeup of this Arizona Diamondbacks team. You know, Ian Kennedy and you got Daniel Hudson, and then they brought over Trevor Cahill, which I think he may have success early on in their rotation. And I like their bullpen there too. They've got JJ Poots, you know, he's just a solid closer. Pitching wins, and I think they have a lot of it. So I like the Arizona Diamondbacks here.
Those are good picks, guys. I'm gonna go with the Giants, and it's just one reason is the pitching, you know, and it's just dominant. And that NL West, we all know, like Trey said, if you love pitching, you'll love the West. I think the Giants are all skate by, like you said, probably a couple of games. I think it'll come down to Arizona and the Dodgers. I don't think the Rockies or Padres will make that much noise this year. So I think it's those three teams we just picked. So at the end of the day, guys, who do you have in the World Series, Trey? Who do you like to play in the World Series?
I think this is going to be one of those years, just like last year, where you have a team in there you didn't expect. You know, with the two wild card, there's really no telling. That's what's going to be. And I love the fact that baseball is doing this. And I would like to see them go more than just a one-game wild card in this. So I think it's going to draw so much excitement, as we saw last year with, you know, game 162 where Longoria hits the home run and the Cardinals come back. They're going to have that kind of playoff atmosphere, I think, this year. But at the end of the day, in the NL, the team that I really like coming out of this thing, I think is going to be the NL West champion. So I think I'm going to go with the Dodgers coming out, and Clayton Kershaw just blossoming. Vegas odds, I'll tell you, I would win a lot of money if that happens. But, you know, not picking the common team, I think is because I really think the NL is just going to be all over the place this year with the favorite. So I'll go with the Dodgers in the NL.
Okay. Chris, what do you like?
Oh, for the NL, I'll have to pick the Phillies. I really don't want to, but I think at the end of the day, you know, their pitching staff in October is very hard to beat. And based on if they can get Ryan Howard and Chase Utley back and get some productivity out of them, I definitely see them playing for it all.
I'm with the Phillies too. I think you know, the wild card. You brought up a good point, Trey, about the two. I think, you know, in the years past, the wild card, I mean, if you won your division or you had the best record, it really didn't matter. You know, it really didn't benefit you. But I think now with the two wild cards, I think we have a bad connection, guys.
You there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm here.
Are you good?
Yeah, we're
okay, good.
Good.
Well, the thing is about the wild card, guys, is, you know, before, a wild card had just as good of a chance because it's one versus, you know, their best pitchers are playing theirs. But now that one-game playoff, it's going to force a team to play their best, pitch their best to survive. So you'll have the wild card coming out playing a division winner, and they'll be using their number two against their number one. So I don't think the wild cards will fare well this year as in years past. I'm going to pick the Phillies to win the division, and I think they're going to the World Series. All right, we're going to go to the American League, Trey.
This is going to be one of those years where I think the AL is going to be just so good. And I think that ultimately the AL team is going to win the championship, whoever comes out of this very, very tough league right now. Actually, I like Anaheim, and if their pitching holds up, their starting pitching, and their bullpen's already good, with the hitting they have, and if Mark Trumbo can play third base, they're going to have an amazing lineup, one that I think is going to be very dangerous. We already know Albert Pujols is extremely clutch in the playoffs, which is another factor, with Kendry Morales coming back and Howie Kendrick, who may hit 350 this year. I think the Anaheim Angels, or whatever they're getting called these days, the Los Angeles Angels, I think they're going to make us all remember their name next at the end of this season, and then they're going to take home a World Series title.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Trey. I mean, I think the Angels, they've definitely put themselves in position to win this thing. You know, like I said earlier, I think Pujols is going to win the AL MVP. He's going to have a monster year. And their pitching is solid top to bottom. And I think they're going to win. They're going to win the World Series. That's my pick. I think they'll easily beat any National League team, you know, probably in six games. So that's kind of.
Well, I'm going to go with the Detroit Tigers. I like Trent Fielder, the acquisition. I think Miguel Cabrera is still one of the best hitters in the game. I think Verlander is, you know, a top three pitcher in the game. I just think the pitching staff for Detroit this year will get them over the hump. And I think if the pitching gets a little cold, you have the hitting, you know, to step up. So it's good when you have great pitching and great hitting. So if one of them goes cold, you still have a shot to win. So I'm going to go with Detroit against Philadelphia, and I'm going to pick Detroit to win the World Series this year. So, Trey, who are you picking to win it all?
I'll tell you, one of the interesting things, you did bring up a good point, and I think there's a lot of good debate about this, but it's really going to come down to that front-line starter and that second starter that each team has. You know, obviously, you pick the Tigers, like Verlander, who's fantastic. We'll see if somebody like C.J. Wilson, who goes over to the Angels, you know, if he's as good as advertised with that big contract. If he's not, I think you're right. There's going to be another team that will win the World Series. But, you know, a lot of people thought that in Texas and, you know, circles around the AL West, that he may be not worth that contract. So the Angels will soon find out, and that'll be a big factor in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Well, guys, we've had some good discussions. We're about 3 minutes and a half left in the show, and any final thoughts, Chris?
Just who you guys got winning the Cy Young? Any quick picks?
That's a tough one, Trey. What do you think?
I got Kershaw. Obviously, if I'm picking the Dodgers, I think in the AL, David Price, surprise pick.
Yeah, that's a good pick. That's kind of was going to be my surprise pick for the AL as well. I think David Price is going to have a stellar year. Over in the National League, I think I'm going to pick Clayton Kershaw there.
Okay, I'm going to go Derek Lowe in the National League. Yeah, I mean, the National League is so tough, man. But in the American League, I've got Justin Verlander, I think. You know, I love that guy. And in the National League, God, it's so hard, man. I don't know. I really don't know in the National League, and I'd hate to say it right now. So give me a few more days to pick my Cy Young. I don't want to.
We'll get back with you.
We'll get back with you next week, and we'll see who you want to pick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I gotta see who gets hurt and who wins the first game first. Yeah.
And you're gonna pick today on Nomo again.
Okay, give me a surprise team this year that could possibly make the World Series that we haven't really talked about.
Well, I think I kind of alluded to this earlier. I don't know that they've got it to go to the World Series, but my surprise team to make the playoffs this year is going to be the Washington Nationals. I just really like their starting pitching. You know, Strasburg, I think this kid is going to be electric. He is going to be the next big thing, and I'm expecting big things out of them.
Okay.
I think
Braves.
Oh, there you go.
All right, Trey, what do you like?
I'll give you two. I'll give you one in each league. I think surprised a little bit just because they haven't spelled well in the postseason is the Diamondbacks. I think they may make the playoffs. And in the AL, I'll go crazy on you, and I'll say the Blue Jays. How about that for a surprise pick?
I like that. I love the Blue Jays. I think they could have a real good year. That's a good pick. The home run hitting they can do, they can make noise quick. So we're under a minute, guys, and Trey, I want to thank you for coming on and joining us, and I don't want you to be a stranger to our show. We're going to bring you back, and we appreciate you coming on, bud.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one.
Take it easy, Trey.
All right, Chris, we're under a minute, and I appreciate you coming on, co-hosting with me. And
I appreciate you having me.
We're going to do this again Sunday evening, maybe. If we don't do it Sunday, we'll do it, you know, Monday. I know Sunday's Easter, guys, so we're going to try to do our normal show. We might move it to 7 o'clock instead of 5 just because of the holiday. And And I hope everybody that listened enjoyed the show, and I'm sure they enjoyed you, Chris, coming on and giving us your insight on baseball and basketball, and I'm sure they enjoy your training too.
Yeah,
so everybody out there, have a good week, and we'll see you Sunday. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. Take it easy, man. Bye.
Take care.